This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2:05 to go. Fleury at the edge of the crease and now the hash marks as it's dealt back in and set across. Oh, and it didn't go. It was tapped with a wide open net.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of Stanley Cup Final discussion, Winnipeg Jets discussion, a look around the entire NHL for you on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290. And, of course, our website with the latest in Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. We're going to start this Saturday morning. I should introduce my colleagues on the far left of me, Dave Minuk. In the middle, Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're going to start with the Stanley Cup Final momentarily. But before that, the real breaking news of the week. Daddy Ginsberg. Ezra Ginsberg, congratulations. You're now a father, born last Saturday morning. A beautiful baby girl. Mazel tov from Dave and myself and Rory and everybody else. What's it like to be a father?
It's the best thing ever. I really appreciate it, boys. Arielle Hazel was born at 7:02 in the morning last Saturday. Of course she was born on an icy Saturday. It wasn't going to be any other way. And Drew is handing me a present right now, Dave. But just an incredible feeling. The last week has been different than any other week. Naomi has been so amazing throughout the whole process. But as you know, Drew, you've got two kids of your own, a boy and a girl. Mm-hmm. It absolutely changes your life. You don't get a lot of sleep, and it's all worth it because when she opens her eyes and looks at you in the morning, there's no better feeling. So, unfortunately, I wasn't able to do the show with you last week, boys, but, I was a little bit busy, but, she's beautiful, and you guys are going to meet her very soon.
I'm not sure what you were so busy about. She was born at 7 in the morning. The show doesn't start till 9. Dave, I think his commitment level's wavering a little bit.
We're just glad he's back.
Yeah. Anyways, Ezzy, these are for you and for Naomi. This bag is mostly baby stuff. This is for you and Naomi. It's more food, so you guys can just pop it in the oven. I'd like to take credit for it all, but it really comes from Laura. She's the brains of the operation.
I appreciate it. Yeah. You could have given it to me after the show, Drew.
I could have given it
to
you.
We just started the show here.
I know, but there's some frozen enchiladas in there, so I figured you'd want to eat those right now during on air for the next 3 hours.
Yeah, I'll nuke those up.
Yeah, you figured you're going to want to heat those up. But anyway, some little gifts for you and for Naomi. Let's get back into the Stanley Cup Final. It's been a very entertaining first two games of the series. You know, the Golden Knights, that game one was back and forth. It was sort of chaotic. We all know what was
10 goals.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was 10 goals. It was 6-4 with the empty netter that the Golden Knights scored with a couple seconds to go. And really what jumped out to me in that game is that Marc-Andre Fleury looked very human. And the Golden Knights...
Game one or two?
Game one is what I'm talking about. I mean, you know, he's looked more human in this series than he
did. Holtby looked pretty human, too.
Yeah, they definitely both looked human.
It was almost as if they had a long break in between games.
Yeah, well, exactly, which causes rust and which causes sloppiness and everything else.
So, I still don't understand why that game didn't start on a Saturday night. Terrible decision by the NHL, but... Who cares now?
We hammered that out last week as everyone was sitting there twiddling their thumbs, waiting an extra, I don't know, 3 days for the series to start when it didn't make any sense. But in any
J.R. Smith actually thought the game started Saturday.
Yes. that was a very timely basketball
Zinga
reference there, I got to say.
Don't worry, I'll get into my Brian Colangelo jokes a little bit later.
Yeah, but how many burner phones do you guys have?
Well, his burner accounts, not phones.
He's got to tweet them from the burner phones, though.
No, you don't.
Yes, he did. He had separate phones. It wasn't his phone that
he was
tweeting it from.
Because he was probably trying to avoid the Kevin Durant mistake.
Well, that could be the case. It was also apparently his wife who was doing it. And that's enough basketball Twitter conversation for today. Your thoughts, I guess, is the question I have on the first two games of the series between the Golden Knights and the Washington Capitals. I had a game three later on this morning.
It's been a great start to the series. I mean, you're talking about 2-1 goal games because you mentioned there was an empty netter in game one, but it's been a fast physical series. In game one, it was Jonathan Marchessault who leaves the game after Tom Wilson has that high hit. And then in game two, we know what happened. Braden McNabb takes Evgeny Kuznetsov out of the game. And going into tonight's game three, a huge game three, I mean, whoever wins game three tonight, there's a good chance that team will win the series. Just your chances when you win game three, when the series is tied, your chances of winning the series, are better. So, I mean, when you're talking about this series so far, I just think it's been two teams, obviously, that have never won a Stanley Cup, but it's also two teams right now that I think are hungry. And we thought, Dave, that this series might start off a little bit slow, but it has not at all. We talked about the first game, lots of goals, but I thought in game two, Washington did a much better job, obviously defensively, but also of limiting Vegas's high quality scoring chances. Because sure, Vegas had 39 shots in that game, but a lot of those shots were from the outside. But even though a lot of people are praising Washington for the way they played in game two, I mean, you're talking about Alex Tuck almost ties that game up and sends it to overtime. So this series could easily be 2-0 in favor of Vegas. So a great start to the series. We know Washington has struggled at home. They've only won four games. Their record is 4-5 at home. So if Vegas is able to steal tonight's game, boy, would that be huge.
You know, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's been really entertaining, and I think that the NHL's got to be extremely happy considering that they've been so close. You're not seeing big blowout games. I mean, a lot of scoring isn't a bad thing necessarily, mm-hmm. especially for new fans who may be more entertained by that sort of, you know, high-scoring hockey. And I think overall, I mean, your big boys have shown up. Alexander Ovechkin's looked really good. And he's been who you know, kind of expect him to be. And Braden Holtby save, I mean, that's one. Because, you know, whether it was the best save of the year, it doesn't matter. It's simply because you add to what it meant.
Sure, the context.
You know, I mean, again, there may be saves that were equally as nice or even potentially better. I don't know, obviously, because I didn't see every save in the NHL this year. Right. But the reality is, as talked about it earlier and why I agree, is because everything was on the line. I mean, if they tie that game up, late in the third, so deflating. Now, obviously, there's a possibility that Washington wins, but if they don't, then it's over. I mean, we know that if you're down 2-0, the likelihood of you coming back is very minimal. So the fact is that Braden Holtby, who I've kind of pegged to be this difference maker personally, because, you know, this guy who doesn't even start the Stanley Cup Finals in round one for the Washington Capitals, and now he's doing what he's doing. To me, he's a guy who can get a little bit hotter, and he's very focused. So it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do for the remainder of the series.
And the story, Dave, of game one was Vegas's fourth line, right? Mm-hmm. Ryan Reeves chips in, Thomas Nosek chips in, Pierre-Edward Belmar is obviously the other player on that fourth line. For me, the story of game two had to be Lars Eller, right? Mm-hmm. And Lars Eller stepped up in place of Nicklas Backstrom last round.
Right.
And then when Evgeny Kuznetsov leaves the game in game two, Lars Eller steps up and, again, has a one-goal, two-assist performance. He's up to 6 goals and 17 points during these playoffs. He's been a big story. Lars Eller, usually the third-line center, he stepped up big, and Washington is getting those contributions from those depth players that we know when a team goes all the way to the Stanley Cup Final, you have to get those contributions when players are out of the lineup and other players have to step up. So Lars Eller, for me, had to be the number one star of last game.
Well, you know, it's funny, you mentioned the fourth line of the Vegas Golden Knights, and most people, when they would, at the beginning of the playoffs, early in the early rounds of the playoffs, they would have looked at the Vegas fourth line and said, that is an area that they're going to get exposed in. That's an area that line is going to be detrimental to their chances to advance in the playoffs. That fourth line, it helps that the official misses a blatant cross-check by Ryan Reeves before he's able to score the goal. But that fourth line has been tremendous. Really, they were great against the Jets. When we had Jesse Granger of the Las Vegas Sun on last Saturday with us, he said that Pierre-Edward Belmar is going to be his X factor. And he has been, you know, very impactful in the series so far. So it's funny how at the beginning of the playoffs, a fourth line that most people would have thought would have been a black hole for the Vegas has turned out to be a very impactful fourth line and is making a real difference in the Golden Knights' chances to win the Stanley Cup and continue on in this amazing run that they're on.
Yeah, I don't know why people would think that, because they were good all year long for the Golden Knights. So, and as you mentioned, Drew, in previous rounds of the playoffs, they were really good. So when you're talking about this Washington Capitals team, Dave, I think the issue early on in the playoffs, when they were down 2-0 to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then they were also struggling a little bit against the Tampa Bay Lightning when the Lightning went up 3-2 in that series after they won the first two games, was that they weren't getting contributions from their depth players. We talked about Lars Eller, but in the later stages of these playoffs, you're seeing contributions from guys like Brett Connolly, Chandler Stephenson. You're seeing guys like Jacob Verana play really well, even though the results might not be there. And I think also it needs to be talked about the Washington Capitals. You know, John Carlson is obviously their number one defenseman, and we know that Dmitry Orlov is a great player, but, you know, Christian Juice, rookie defenseman, he's been really solid. Yeah. But Braden Holtby has been there all playoffs long. sure, game one, he allows 5 goals. It's not his best game, but Braden Holtby's numbers, guys, have been fantastic in the playoffs every year. I realize the Capitals haven't gone far, but Holtby's been excellent. So for me, the Capitals made a few adjustments, and obviously they limited Vegas's power play. I mean, Vegas goes 1-for-5 on the power play in game two, including that 5-on-3 in the third period. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a killer. I mean, you score there, you have all of the momentum. Washington kills those penalties off. They have all of the momentum. In my opinion, that was a big turning point in the game.
And to your point, as Braden Holtby's career save percentage is .929, which is the second best in NHL history with goalies who have played at least 50 playoff games.
.929, Dave.
Yeah, I know. Like
That's excellent.
No, and that's why, to me, he was the X factor. I really thought that, like, you know, Grubauer starts and you think to yourself, okay, that's kind of, you know, because there's obviously, we had talked about it during the regular season, how Holtby had sat down and they were giving him a mental rest and somewhat what we saw in St. Louis, of course. But, you know, now you've got Holtby playing like the Holtby of old.
It's a nice ace in the hole to have if you're
Washington Capitals. You know, and then you have a guy who's determined, and he feels like he's got something to prove. And, you know, kudos to Barry Trotz for letting his team make those adjustments in the second game, getting it back, because, of course, we know how critical that second game was to them having success overall in the series.
What's interesting to me quickly is that the Capitals' power play hasn't really gotten started yet. The Capitals are able to perform and able to score on the Golden Knights 5-on-5. And we know that the Jets had such difficulty scoring 5-on-5 against the Golden Knights that if the Capitals power play ever gets going in this series, they've only got the one power play goal in the first two games. If the power play continues and the 5-on-5 scoring continues, the Capitals are going to be very dangerous through, you know, as we enter into game three later on tonight. When we come back, we're going to head out to Washington. Steven Waino is at the Capitals practice. He's with the Associated Press. He covers the team. He's going to join us next on the show to talk about the Capitals and the Golden Knights, Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From the Associated Press in Washington, D.C., he covers the Washington Capitals. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Steven Waino. Steven, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. I was going to call you Steven Waino, but I think the NHL already made that mistake earlier this week.
Yeah, I think everybody at the Stanley Cup Finals already doing that.
So we'll call you by your true last name. That's our little gift to you on this Saturday morning, Steven. Obviously brought you on to discuss the Stanley Cup Final. It shifts to the nation's capital for Game 3 and for Game 3 later on tonight. We have to go back to Game 2, though, and the Braden Holtby save on Alex Tuch, because it changes the entire complexion of the series if the Capitals are tied 1-1 versus the game potentially going to overtime and being down 2-0 if the Golden Knights got the subsequent goal. You've been around Braden Holtby. You've seen him for so many years. Everybody else is going crazy about the save. He's downplaying it and playing it very cool, very calm. Is that the exact reaction you'd expect from Braden Holtby, given what you know of him?
Oh, of this guy? Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's such a process-oriented guy as an athlete. Like, he doesn't care about spectacular saves. During his career, he said, look, I don't really care about wins, really. It's not about kind of what the result is. It's the process. It's the fundamentals of making the save. And it wasn't a great fundamental save, but, man, it was a fun save. I mean, everybody's kind of jaw-dropping about it. Marc-Andre Fleury's like, yeah, it was an awesome save. But Braden Holtby is a guy who he's so laser-focused on what he has to do correctly that it was more a lucky save to him than it was a great save.
Steven, Evgeny Kuznetsov left Game 2 after that high hit from Braden McNabb. He's currently listed as day-to-day with an upper body injury. Are you expecting later today to find out that Kuznetsov is going to play tonight for Game 3?
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. I'm here at the Capitals morning skate. Evgeny Kuznetsov on the ice, doing line rushes in his normal spot. He looked fine yesterday. Looked like there were no limitations. He had no kind of brace on that left wrist, left arm. That was injured on that hit from Braden McNabb, but he looks fine. I mean, it looks like the Capitals, including Brooks Orpik with that injured left pinky finger, looks like the Capitals will have their full lineup, including Evgeny Kuznetsov.
No, Stephen, there's been a lot made of everything that's going on in Vegas and how the fans are reacting to being in the Stanley Cup Finals. But what's it like in Washington right now? You know that market extremely well. How's the fan base reacting to finally being back in the Stanley Cup Finals?
It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun around here. I mean, it's not kind of Vegas-level theatrics, but, I mean, the fans have packed the Capitals practice facility for a morning skate. I mean, they're three or four deep along the glass here, cheering the Capitals, coming to watch them skate around this morning. It's fascinating to see that the Stanley Cup final in Washington, and just we're going to see this with the concert later with Sting and Shaggy, and the game watch party the other night for game two got 14,000 people in the arena when the game was happening 2,500 miles away. It's pretty spectacular in D.C. right now, and fans have been waiting a long time for this.
Stephen Wino, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, what jumps out at me after the first two games is just how successful the Capitals have been scoring 5-on-5 or at even strength against Marc-Andre Fleury. Are you surprised at the success they've had? Because here in Winnipeg, we know how stingy the Golden Knights were 5-on-5 and that the Jets' offensive success primarily came with the man advantage.
Yeah, and it was almost unsustainable how good Marc-Andre Fleury and Vegas' defense were against Winnipeg so far in the playoffs in general, that it was almost like he had to come back down to earth a little bit. And I think we've seen enough of that in the series that the Capitals have taken advantage of very little kind of miscues in the defensive zone or mistakes. A couple of the goals the Capitals have scored, Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't been close to making a save. He was so out of it. And not saying it's his fault, but the way the play developed, he was so out of the play a couple of times that it leads me to believe the Capitals have found something in Vegas' defensive scheme that they've been able to exploit.
Stephen, Lars Eller was obviously a big story in Game 2. He picked up a big goal, added two assists. He stepped up to the second line. Nicholas Backstrom moved up to the first line after Evgeny Kuznetsov left the game. I mean, how big have Lars Eller's contributions been, considering that he was criticized a lot for not being that good during last year's playoffs?
They've been essential. They've needed Lars Eller to play like this to be able to get to this point. And when they lost Nicholas Backstrom late in that Pittsburgh series and had to go without him in game six and then the first two games in Tampa, the first three games against Tampa, Lars Eller was, until at least that game three, one of the Capitals' best players. He stepped up not only into that second-line center role, but on the power play, too, where he's the one making the passes instead of Kuznetsov or Backstrom. And it's like the Capitals don't miss a beat. And you got to give Ryan McClellan a lot of credit for this. $3.5 million now for the next 5 years. Re-signed Lars Eller way well before this. They've locked in great value on a guy like that. And really, the Capitals need him to be a really good to great third-line center. But when they needed him to move up the lineup, he looked like he's not out of place at all doing it.
Stephen, we've always been impressed with Barry Trotz, but he just seems extremely loose right now. And, you know, whether it's skating a lap or telling you guys to stay hydrated, have you noticed a difference in the Capitals coach in the playoffs?
Yeah, very much. And a big difference from last year and previous playoffs to now, too. It's just, I think part of it is not having a contract and almost coaching as if he has nothing to lose. But he's been very loose. There's not that tightness you see from him that sometimes trickles down to players. We've seen it from Bruce Boudreau in the city before, where when a coach gets tight and a team falls down in a playoff series, it kind of, the team can also get tight. Barry Trotz has not gotten tight at all. He's been extremely loose, almost unfettered in kind of how calm he's been along the way here. And you could tell looking at his team that they follow that lead. And him and Ovechkin, too. They both look very loose and relaxed and like they're having fun during the playoffs.
Stephen Wino, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Stanley Cup Final. Game 3 goes tonight in Washington. Stephen's on site for the game. You know, Stephen, we were talking last segment about the impact of the Golden Knights' fourth line so far in the series. You know, they were certainly impactful in Game 1, Reeves and Noshek and Pierre-Edward Belmar. Are the Capitals looking to do anything different to try and mitigate that line, which is something you'd be hard-pressed to say that you would have predicted hearing earlier in the series? Or are they just sort of happy with the tone and they figure that any player in this series is going to get an opportunity at some point?
Yeah, Barry Trotz is going to be able to control the matchups now with the last change, and I expect him to try to get either of the Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Wilson line or the Vrana, Backstrom, Oshie line out there against that fourth line, because what the Knights fourth line has done a great job of doing is cycling the puck in the offensive zone, doing the things the fourth line do, but also producing on those shifts. And it might be a little bit more difficult for that line to do it when trying to defend some of the Capitals' big stars, where Gerard Gallant was able to get kind of a fourth line versus fourth line matchup in Vegas, and that plays to the skill of Belmar, Reeves, and Nocheck. But now the Capitals are going to try to put those guys on their heels, and certainly the other line will be matched up against that William Karlsson, Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault line, as the Capitals tend to like to go power on power.
Now, Steven, during the first three rounds of the playoffs, the entire hockey world was talking about how great of a trade deadline acquisition Paul Stastny was by the Winnipeg Jets. But when you look at what Michael Kempney has done for the Washington Capitals, they acquired him for a 2018 third rounder prior to the trade deadline. Is it possible that that move was very underrated and that might turn out to be the greatest trade deadline acquisition of the year?
It certainly looks like it right now. And given that Thomas Tatar is not playing for Vegas and it's been in and out of the lineup, Michael Kempney has been a revelation, a guy who couldn't crack Joe Quenneville's lineup at times as a third pairing defenseman at best there. And he's fit in perfectly next to John Carlson on the second pairing. He's been the top four defenseman the Capitals needed, and didn't come at a high price at the trade deadline. He wasn't a big name. There wasn't a whole lot of pressure or talk about him, but he certainly has helped the Capitals as much as any player coming into this team. Among the Chandler Stevensons, Devontae Smith-Pelly, Alex Chason, the guys they acquired this year, Michael Kempney's been the biggest and best addition.
You know, Steven, it's amazing we've gone through the whole interview without asking you about Alexander Ovechkin, but just how impactful has he been? You know, you see, again, you talked about how loose he was, but are you surprised at how he's been able to just adjust to playing on such a massive stage?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. He's been a great playoff player in his career. He's been a point-of-game guy. What has impressed me is just how he's taken on the look, I'm going to take this team on my shoulders and lead this team to a Stanley Cup finalist. He's been a man on a mission. You expect him to keep scoring goals like this. If Vegas has any chance of winning the series, the Golden Knights have to shut down Alex Ovechkin, and I'm not sure that's possible right now.
Steven, who are you more excited to see over the next two games? Sting, Shaggy, Fallout Boy, or Pat Sajak?
I'm excited to see Sting and Shaggy because I've only heard about their collaboration, and I couldn't think of two musical acts more different than Sting and Shaggy. But now that they're playing together, I'm fascinated to see that kind of mix and the chemistry they have compared to the chemistry guys like Alex Ovechkin and Vinny Kuznetsov.
Steven, last question for you. It's rare that you have a team in the Stanley Cup final that has three rookies that are contributing as significantly as Verana, Stevenson, and Juice are for the Washington Capitals. Is that just sort of a symbol or emblematic of the team that Barry Trotz has put together this year, that it doesn't matter that they're inexperienced, it doesn't matter that they're so young, he's just putting them out there, they've performed all season for them, and why wouldn't they perform just the same for me in the playoffs?
Yeah, and I think it's emblematic of the growth of the organization in that the Capitals in Hershey have developed a lot of players who maybe didn't look like star prospects. A lot of the guys who we thought were their star prospects didn't turn out to be that. But Troy Mann, who was actually fired as Hershey coach a little over a month ago, I think should get a lot of credit for the development of specifically of Brana, Stevenson, and Juice, and what he's been able to do with those guys, and even Nathan Walker and Travis Boyd, who came in for Game 6 of that Pittsburgh series. That organizationally, this is a victory for the Capitals, that they've been able to plug young talent in the lineup to fill the shoes of guys like Kevin Shattenkirk, Carl Osner, Daniel Winnick, Justin Williams, Marcus Johansson, all the talent they lost, and it doesn't look like they lost anything because of those young guys.
Steven Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. He's live on site in Washington for Game 3 of tonight's Stanley Cup Final. Steven, appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get back to it. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Capitals and Golden Knights.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Steven. Thanks again. When we come back, we shift our focus from the Stanley Cup Final to your Winnipeg Jets. A lot of Jets talk coming up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
3-2, time of the goal for McMudden Yates Building Supplies. Down in front of it, score! Jacob Trouba, all the way down at the side of the net, buries it, and the Winnipeg Jets have tied the game up 3-3 Wheeler down for Trouba. In tight. Finds the back of the net. And this game is all even.
Dennis Bayak with the call from Game 3 of the Jets-Predators series. Jacob Trouba's tying goal, which blew the roof off Bell MTS Place. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Going to spend the next few minutes discussing Jacob Trouba, the restricted free agent defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. Said all the right things, gentlemen, after the season ended and the end-of-season interviews. Said all the right things about wanting to be a long-term member of the Winnipeg Jets. Said all the right things about it wanting to come to a contract agreement quickly, wanting to get a deal done at a real quickly on in the offseason here. Do you think that this is going to be as contentious a negotiation as it was last time when Jacob Trouba...
I hope not.
Yeah, obviously. He's arbitration eligible now, so that's certainly an ace in the hole that each team or that each side could potentially hold if an agreement isn't able to come, if they're not able to come to an agreement early on. But from the Jets' perspective and from Jacob Trouba's perspective, do you expect to see a long-term deal materialize here? And if so, what do you think the dollars and cents of that contract might look like?
Yeah, Drew, he's obviously signing a long-term contract here. It's not going to be a bridge contract like it was a couple of years ago. And there's no reason to believe that this is going to be a contentious contract negotiation here, right? Because as you remember, a couple of years ago when it was called The Trouble with Trouba by my good friend Dave Minuk, and we had all of those articles.
I coined that.
I think it was Dave.
Dave?
I don't remember.
Dave's like, I don't think I was even here. No, anyways, go on.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
It's Dave's now.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, the big issue for Trouba, guys, was that he wasn't getting enough ice time, especially on the power play, right? And he was playing his offside.
Yeah.
Right? That whole, he was playing on the left side, but he's a right shot. And even though, you know, defensemen have the ability to play their offside, he wanted to be the Jets' number one right shot defenseman, top pairing defenseman. And he is now. Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. That's your top pair. And it's going to be your top pair for many years to come. Obviously, unless the Jets trade Trouba, but there's no reason to believe the Jets are going to trade Trouba. So it's absolutely going to be a long-term contract extension. And our colleague Jim Toth tweeted this out a couple of weeks back, 3 weeks back maybe, that all indications are from Jacob Trouba and his agent that he wants to sign a long-term contract. So unless we hear something to the contrary, it looks like he is going to sign that long-term contract. Now, I have to believe that Trouba and the Jets want to sign a 6 or 7 year deal. And I know there are some comparables out there, and Trouba's a little bit tricky. And the reason why he's a little bit tricky is because he's not your prototypical offensive defenseman, and he's not your prototypical shutdown defenseman. He's kind of a hybrid, right? And sure, some defensemen are not necessarily one or the other, right? Like, you'd look at a guy like Aaron Ekblad, for example, and you'd say, you know, his offensive upside is higher. Or a guy like Morgan Rielly, for example. Morgan Riley's a guy that was often compared to Jacob Trouba, or a guy like Seth Jones. Now, I think Jacob Trouba is in that category. He might be a small step below a guy like Morgan Rielly or a guy like Seth Jones. Seth Jones is probably going to win the Norris Trophy within the next 2 or 3 years. He certainly might be a finalist. But Trouba's a guy that I think maybe his offensive upside isn't as high as we used to think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean during Trouba's first pro NHL year, he puts up 29 points.
Yeah.
And I think everybody was saying, okay, well, within 2 or 3 years, Trouba's going to be a 50-point defenseman. He's like a Drew Doughty. And I think there are similarities to Drew Doughty and Jacob Trouba. I'm not saying they're the same type of player. I mean, Doughty, you're talking about the best defenseman in the game, in my opinion. But Trouba is a physical defenseman. He has that big shot. He's got great vision. I mean, he is a shutdown defenseman who can contribute offensively as well. Obviously, this year, he only plays 55 games, but actually, if you look at his points per game,
yeah,
if he plays a full season, he would have had 35 points. That would have been a career year for him. His career best was last year with 33 points.
Again,
and he also missed games.
Yeah, that was only in 60
right?
games last
so
year.
So that
yeah.
those are the concerns. There are some injury concerns. I'm not talking about going forward, but injury concerns as far as getting a true gauge, Dave, of what his offensive upside is, because I think he is a 35 to 40 point defenseman. I don't necessarily know that he is a 50 point defenseman, Drew. So why I mention that is because I think you're paying him similar type of money as a guy like Jacob Slavin on Carolina.
Sure.
And I know you've brought that up before, Drew, as a good comparable. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's necessarily going to get that elite money. I don't think he's an $8 million a year defenseman, but I think he falls somewhere in the $5 to $6 million range.
Well, you mentioned the elite, and you know that, and that's Drew Doughty money, where, you know, like you said, the best defenseman in the game. And there's been talk, of course, way back when, you know, when he signed this 2-year bridge contract after having the contract dispute with the Jets, that that's what he was looking for. He was looking to get paid like Drew Doughty. I mean, there's no evidence to say that he's got that he is Drew Doughty, because I mean, Drew Doughty is like you said, the best defenseman in the league. But you know, Jacob Trouba, you know, maybe he has more offensive upside that he hasn't been able to demonstrate, the combination of maybe missing some games and the fact that still in offensive situations, Dustin Byfuglien is going to be the Jets' number one option on the right side. Because, you know, when you have, you know, Byfuglien's still going to get your top power play minutes from a defenseman. The Jets usually go, of course, with the four forwards, one defenseman look when it comes to the power play. So the numbers aren't necessarily ever going to get to that point because he's got Byfuglien blocking him offensively to some extent, Dave. But given what Trouba's been able to do with Joshua Morrissey, given that he is, as you said, the number one shutdown pairing defenseman, isn't it incumbent on the Jets to maybe pay a little bit more to him than what the straight offensive numbers might dictate?
Absolutely.
Because of what he does on the defensive side of the game.
Yep.
And the fact that, really, to no fault of his own, Dustin Byfuglien is there to maybe take away some of those offensive opportunities.
I want to let Dave get in here, but my point is that Seth Jones is making $5.4 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, his second contract came after his entry-level deal, if I'm not mistaken. We'll have to look that up, but I'm pretty sure he got that big contract after his entry-level deal. Morgan Rielly makes $5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, and this is no offense to Trouba, I think Seth Jones and Morgan Rielly are better defensemen than him. So I'm just saying, I don't necessarily know you can go much higher than $6 million a year.
Dave?
Yeah, no, I'm with Ezra. Like, I think that you've got him, Jacob Trouba, in that $5 to $6 million range, probably. Can't nail down an exact dollar figure, but you know, it's somewhere, to me, it's somewhere in that number, and it's probably, again, on the longer term. Because if you're the Jets and you're looking at, you know, you've got all this offense, but you know that if you can lock up Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba as your top pairing defenseman, how good is that going to look for this team for years to come? And the fact of the matter is, I mean, winning cures a lot. I mean, think about the tone that we were hearing a few years back. And you know what? I'm not particularly surprised considering that this team has been allowed to continue to grow together. And they've, as you develop and forge bonds with players, it becomes harder and harder to leave. And to me, again, if you can make the money and see what the potential is, and that's the whole point. I mean, at the end of the day, players want to win. You know, and you could talk about, oh, well, maybe I'll get $7 million going and playing on Team X. But the reality is, and as we've talked about, and Jacob Trouba has seen, this is a team that could challenge for the Stanley Cup next year. They did for this year,
mm-hmm.
and they could again next year. So while there's no guarantees in life, to me, he sees the opportunity. And so he's seeing the money, and he's seeing the opportunity, and he's seeing what he's been given by the team in terms of, you know, like you were talking about, Drew, chances to play with that top pair
mm-hmm.
with Josh Morrissey. And what more could he ask for? Aside from probably better weather.
You know, another contract that jumped out to me as you're talking comparables is a guy like Nick Leddy. And now Nick Leddy is more offensively inclined than Jacob Trouba, but Trouba is probably better on the defensive side of the game than Nick Leddy is. But Leddy's similar thing. 3-year entry-level deal. Signs a 2-year bridge contract worth, you know, $2.7 million a year as a salary cap hit. Trouba's was a little higher.
Yep.
And then he signs after that bridge deal expires, again, just when he's 24 years old, or just about to turn 24 years old, the same age as Trouba. He signs a 7-year, $38.5 million contract with the Islanders, $5.5 million yep. a season. I just think there's a lot of comparables, again, between
that. Leddy is a good comparable, Drew. And,
yeah.
you know, we mentioned Jacob Slavin.
Jacob
Trouba's
well.
A better defenseman than Slavin. He has a higher offensive upside than Slavin. I just think he's overall a better defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy, Mike Matheson. Trouba's a better defenseman than Mike Matheson. Mike Matheson's a good defenseman. I also think Trouba's a better defenseman than Leddy. And you mentioned, I mean, Leddy's a guy, his point totals might be a little bit higher. Not by much, actually.
Not as much as you would think.
Right, but yeah. Trouba's more physical than Leddy.
Yeah.
And I think he's a better shutdown defenseman than Leddy. Leddy can skate, don't get me wrong. So can Trouba. But Leddy is a good comparable. So based on that, based on him making, Letty, that is, making $5.5 million a year, mm-hmm. and Jacob Slavin making $5.3 million a year, if you're Trouba's agent, Kurt Overhart, you're saying, I've got a $6 million a year defenseman here.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, Slavin is $5.3 million, but he signed that contract after his entry-level deal. So it's not an exact situation. There's fewer years of unrestricted free agency being bought out in the Slavin contract than there would be with a lengthy Trouba contract. So it wouldn't surprise me if Trouba signs for 6 or 7 years that you're going to have to pay him, or the average annual value, the mm-hmm. average salary cap hit might be closer to $6 million
yep.
than necessarily to 5.3 or 5.5 because you're
right.
buying out more UFA
term,
years.
That's why the term matters.
Well, of course, that's why the term matters. I mean, if the term, you know, if it's only a 2-year deal, then obviously he's going to hit unrestricted free agency after mm-hmm. that. But the Jets don't want that. They want
seven years, $42 million.
Put it in the bank.
Just to use some, you know,
simple math,
simple numbers there makes a lot of sense. And who knows? Maybe the AAV gets close to $6.5 million a year. But I think if you're getting closer to $7 million, I think maybe you're getting a little bit uncomfortable there. So $6 million a year, $6.5 million a year, that seems to make a lot of sense to me. And again, I'm not a capologist, and I haven't crunched the numbers. But you mentioned some comparables, Nick Leddy, Mike Matheson, Jacob Slavin.
Yeah.
Zach Bogosian is another guy, but, I mean, Trouba's a better defenseman than Bogosian.
Well,
I mean, I love Bogo. Bogo's a great guy. He's a great player. But I think Trouba's upside is higher than Bogo's.
And, of course, Bogosian signing that with the Jets before he was traded to Buffalo. But it's sort of I thought the comparables were sort of funny there using Bogosian because we know how you know how close buddies those Trouba and Bogosian still are. In any event, I think the Trouba contract, the length will be interesting, and the dollars might creep up closer to the $6 million. I've heard a lot of people just saying.
And he deserves it. I mean, Trouba was excellent in the playoffs. I mean, maybe, you know, the series against Vegas wasn't his best series, but in the series against Nashville, going up against the Johansson line, and mm-hmm. I realize, you know, Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson, they got their points. But Trouba was excellent in the playoffs for the Jets, and he was excellent all year long. Obviously, you know, he missed some games with that injury, but, you know, he's turned into exactly what we thought he was going to turn into. And I think, you know, the offensive totals will come. He's still young. Well, you forget that he's still in his early 20s here.
The interesting part to me is when that if he signs a long-term deal, if he signs a, you know, a 7-year deal or something like that, Bufflin's contract only runs another 3 years. So maybe after those 3 years are up, there's a bit of a changing in the guard in terms of your offensive upside as well. Maybe Trouba can find that offensive game and get an opportunity to be a number one offensive and defensive defenseman as Bufflin's contract begins to wind down, and Trouba's might be hitting the peak of it in the course of if it's a longer 6-7-year deal.
Yeah, Drew, 2 years ago, it was much different. I mean, the situation was much different. Now, you know that Trouba is going to be signed long-term. A couple of years ago was different because there was that whole issue with usage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now there isn't that problem. There's no doubt that he's your top-pairing right-side defenseman.
When we come back, we're going to discuss Steve Mason. Given the Jets' salary cap crunch, would the Jets be wise to buy out the final year of Steve Mason's contract? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Watched by Brian Little. In for Kreider. Kreider, Morrow giving chase at the line. Shot blocked in front. Back door. Score. Or does Mason have it? Mason has it underneath him.
He's got it.
Matt Zuccarello does not believe it.
He can't.
One of the more memorable saves in this Jets season was by Steve Mason on Matt Zuccarello there in that game in Madison Square Garden towards the end of the year. It was a fantastic save from a goaltender who had a really rough season. Just an absolutely injury-riddled campaign for Steve Mason, who was brought in ostensibly to be the Jets' number one goalie this year. We know that ship has sailed given the performance of Connor Hellebuck this season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio.
By the way, instead of saying it's an IC Saturday, I think we should start saying it's an Ariella Saturday.
We're going to run that up the flagpole of the Illegal Curve management and see if...
Drew, keep in mind Naomi's listening right now.
I'm aware, but keep in mind that I also have two children who might get upset by the lack of acknowledgement of their...
But were they born on a Saturday?
Yes. Aaron was born on a Saturday, and you guys announced it on air.
Okay, so we'll say it's an Ariella and Aaron Saturday.
What about Sam? He's going to be a little pissed off.
But Sam wasn't born on a Saturday.
It doesn't matter. He's still my child. It's not like he's a secondary child because he was
born. No, you have to be born on a Saturday. Sorry, Sam. One of your kids gets in there.
There you go. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Shout out to the Keener Jerseys, boys. I know that Keener is pumped that, Dave, third jerseys are coming back.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. I missed that memo. Yeah. Do we know what the Jets' third, like, is it going to be the Heritage Classic?
No, apparently not.
I think the Jets' third jersey is actually going to be the Fisherman's Friend New York Islanders jersey.
That would just be odd. I'm not sure how that makes any sense at all. But
do I ever make any sense?
Rarely. And now you're sleep deprived, so God help us for the rest of this show. He's going to be speaking in tongues by the time the 11 o'clock hour comes around.
I would assume it's going to be the Heritage Classic jersey.
But Dave just said it wasn't going to be.
I have no inside knowledge. It's what I've read seems to indicate that it'll be lettering almost.
Some of those third jerseys from back in the late 90s, the Fox Tracks era, were pretty cartoonish. There was that LA Kings one with the big picture of a king on it. There was some interesting jerseys there that I don't know if they were altogether aesthetically pleasing.
Remember the Big Bear Boston Bruins
jersey?
I love that one.
Was nice.
I suspect you won't see the Heritage Classic because if you think about it, most people have already bought it.
Exactly.
So from a financial perspective of selling new jerseys.
Buzz Killington over here.
No. No, but I mean, the truth is I love the Heritage Classic uniform, obviously. I think it's, you know, but I just think from a financial perspective, if you want to sell new jerseys,
you want to sell
a new jersey, not something that's already been out.
But Dave, you got to think they're going to go vintage, though, for the alternate jersey.
Yeah, no, I know. I, like I said, I don't even know. I can't even recall where I read it. I just remember reading that it was intimated that it would be more of a along the lines of like Winnipeg or something like that. Like it'd be the name.
Yeah, as opposed to a logo, it would have a word mark of
some
sort.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Well, it sounds like a segment for the summer when the new jersey comes out and we're desperate for content, so we'll save it for then, and instead we'll talk about Steve Mason right now, who, of course, signed that two-year, $8.2 million contract prior to this season. So he's got a year and $4.1 million left on it. Given the Jets' salary cap situation, we know how they have to sign all these restricted free agents. We know that they want to get Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler under contract to longer term deals that can be negotiated as of July 1st. Could you see a situation where the Jets elect to buy out Steve Mason, saving themselves about $2.7 million on the salary cap this season and spreading out a cap hit of $1.3 million this year and next year? Or do you think that, given the lack of a built-in backup goaltender there, that's going to keep him around for another year?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew, and obviously none of us know the answer, but Kevin Cheveldayoff in his exit interview said that there's absolutely no way the Jets are going to buy Steve Mason out. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to happen, but I think, Dave, if you're the Jets, you have to be exploring the idea, and I think it's because you originally brought Steve Mason in to be the de facto number one goalie. And, you know, he only plays 13 games because he had all of the injury problems and the concussions and all that. But when you consider that Connor Hellebuck most likely is going to play somewhere in the range of 60 to 65 games next year, you're paying a backup goalie $4.1 million to play, what, 15 games? 20 games?
But I think you're also paying them to some extent for the insurance of knowing that you have a excellent backup goaltender, assuming, again, he's healthy and assuming that he bounces back to the form that the Jets expected of Steve Mason when they brought him in. I mean, the alternative is what? All of a sudden...
I think the alternative is you bring in a cheaper backup goaltender, and there are other backup goaltenders on the market that you could probably pay, what, $1.5 million to $2 million? I think you might need that cap room. Again, Drew, I'm not advocating for the Jets to buy out Steve Mason, but the topic of conversation was, could the Jets look at buying out Steve Mason? And I think, you know, there are other affordable options. When you consider that all you need, it's not like you need a veteran goaltender to show Connor Hellebuck the ropes. I mean, Connor Hellebuck is a Vezina Trophy finalist now. Maybe a couple of years ago you needed that, But my point is that because he makes $4 million a year, even if the salary cap is going to go up to, what, $80 million a year? That's $75 million a year, Drew. So
yeah.
Let's say $80
million
a year.
That's the number that we're going to use.
But let's say, for example, you know, you need those extra $2 million to sign a guy like Paul Stastny, right? So I think they might be considering it. Again, if I was a betting man, I don't think they are going to buy him out. But I guess my answer to your question is I think they might be considering it, or they have considered it, or will consider it, because of the money they'll save and the fact that they can bring in a cheaper backup goaltender. Let's be honest, guys. Michael Hutchinson most likely is not coming back. I think Dave would agree with that.
Yep.
Right? So right now, your two goaltenders with the Manitoba Moose, Eric Comrie is your starting goalie, Jamie Phillips is your backup goalie, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got Mikael Berdan, but most likely, Dave, he starts off at the East Coast level.
Yeah, I
right?
think so. Yeah.
So if you are buying out Steve Mason, you're either bringing in a free agent goaltender, a veteran backup.
Well, I think that's your only option.
I'm just going to throw out a name, like a Curtis McElhinney.
Sure.
Who actually had a very good year. Or I'll throw out another guy, Calvin Pickard. Had a pretty good year with the Toronto Marlies, started off the year with the Vegas Golden Knights. So Calvin Pickard, Curtis McElhinney, just a goalie like that who maybe cost you $1 million to $2 million a year, Dave. But again, you don't have the luxury of having Michael Hutchinson, so you're basically going to use Eric Comrie unless you sign a free agent goaltender, right? So again, I'm not saying that they're going to buy out Mason, but I also wouldn't say that they're not considering it.
Dave, your thoughts on it? I mean, I don't see it happening. That's my personal thought. I appreciate Ezzie's comments, especially about the salary cap savings. I think the Jets would be very thin, though.
And but Drew, you got to think they're considering it or have considered it.
I appreciate the way you broke it down there with the cost savings and how that would affect maybe signing a guy like Paul Stastny if they were trying to juggle the money to make that work. I just think the Jets without Steve Mason could potentially leave them fairly thin in terms of goaltending if something was to happen to Connor Hellebuck, or even if he's to take a slight step back and all of a sudden you need your backup goaltender to play 25 games instead of the initial 15 games you would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I think that, you know, you really have to take whatever a GM says in those exit meetings with a grain of salt. I don't think he was going to say, yeah, you know what, I'm actually considering that. I mean, so I would anticipate that, you know, despite what Kevin Sheveldayoff said to the media that day, that it really, as you guys just touched on, as you broke it down, they're really going to examine all their options. Because the truth is that if, from a cost standpoint, they need that money to be able to get a bunch of other guys under the cap, then obviously they're going to do it. If they need that money, then they'll have to. It's something they have to consider because it's an option on the table for them right now. It's a way of manufacturing a little bit of room. So I think from that perspective, it's something they would consider doing. I mean, again, you know, no GMs love admitting that they've made a mistake on a contract. Nobody likes to say, well, you know, I mean, I paid this guy this much money and it was an error. But the reality is sometimes you just have to suck it up and take the hit, because you know that for the betterment of the team, you're going to get better by doing it. Now, again, will they do it necessarily if they don't need the money? Probably not, I would imagine. But again, it's an option.
That's what it is. I think it's sort of an option that they hold in their back pocket, and we'll see as that unfolds closer to July 1st when they can get some of these contracts done, if it's an option the Jets choose to use. I personally would be surprised. I appreciate your opinion, Ezzie, that you can see them certainly considering it, and I would agree with you that they would probably be considering
it. Right, and I said I don't think they will do it, but right. I think they'll consider it.
And I think you're right that they'll consider it, but you look at the other options available in terms of unrestricted free agency. Actually, McElhaney's under contract, and so is Picard as an RFA for next year. So you're looking at some, you know, dregs of the goaltending world to some extent. Ooh. If you're trying to bring those guys
in. His numbers were good this year.
I know, but he's under contract to the Leafs. He ain't going anywhere.
And Pickard's numbers were good last year for Colorado. He was good in the World Championships.
Pickard just is saying, an NHL caliber goaltender who's right now stuck at the AHL level.
I'm just saying there are other options as a backup goaltender that you have, and you don't have to pay that backup goaltender $4 million a year.
You're right about that. There's no question about that whatsoever. When we come back, Ken Danico is going to join us. He's an NHL Network analyst. He covers the New Jersey Devils. We'll talk more about the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Stanley Cup finals, and maybe touch on the Devils with our good buddy Ken Danico. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals goes tonight in Washington, D.C. Ken Danico is an NHL Network analyst. He also covers the New Jersey Devils for MSG+. He's going to join us to talk about the Stanley Cup Final and the Devils' offseason. Ken, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you guys today?
Doing very well, Ken. How about yourself?
All good, all good.
That's what we like to hear. Ken, obviously the first two games in Vegas were a couple of entertaining contests. Game one won by the Golden Knights. The Capitals come back with a huge Game 2 victory on the road, shifting the series back to Washington now for a best-of-five series. As the series shifts to Washington, you know, what are your key takeaways from the first two games of this series?
Well, first off, they've been pretty evenly matched teams, haven't they, in the first two games? And you mentioned it, very entertaining so far. So great for the viewer, regardless who you're cheering for. If you're just a hockey fan in general, great for the National Hockey League. And the surprising Vegas Golden Knights continue to show why they've had such a terrific season. Could have won both, but they've been tight. I think the Capitals, you know, they've shown all playoffs where they've kind of flown under the radar compared to a couple of years of winning the President's Trophy, that they have some resolve. And we know you need goaltender has to come up big, and no bigger save if they go on to win the Cup. We'll be watching that one from Braden Holtby with just over a minute left for a lot of years, and he may have saved the Washington Capitals if, in fact, they do go on to win the Cup. It is pretty tough to go down 2-0, but I think it's been a very evenly played series. And you know, give Lars Eller a lot of credit for the Capitals. He stepped up every time their top guys backed some earlier in the playoffs, and Kuznetsov went down with injury, and that's why they are where they are, because other guys step up. So far, good. Capitals are going to have to figure out how to be a little better at home, only 4-5 in these playoffs thus far.
Ken, you had a great career, obviously, as an NHL defenseman, winning 3 Stanley Cups with the Devils. You played with some Hall of Fame defensemen in Scott Stevens and Scott Niedermeyer. Watching the Washington Capitals, what stands out to you when you watch John Carlson and Dmitry Orlov?
Well, I would look at Orlov as a little more high risk. I mean, he does have his moments where he makes mistakes, but the way the game has gone, he's very dynamic, smart, excellent with the puck and shifty, and he's been real good for the Capitals for the most part. Like I said, he does have his hiccups, but that's going to happen when you're a guy that wants to make plays, and you're going to take some chances and make some high-risk plays at times. But he's just a smart puck-moving defenseman who has a great set of hands. And John Carlson, what a time for him to have a career year, Norris Trophy candidate. And he's done the same come playoff time here, where he's been real good. He's got a great shot. He's such a heady hockey player, very calm, poised up top on the power play, moves the puck real well. And he's got a real good stick for me watching John Carlson. You know, he's not overly physical for his size, but positionally sound. And we know in this game today, with the speed and the way it's played and penalties called, it's a lot tougher for defensemen these days. You have to have a good stick. And he uses it extremely well, deflects a lot of passes around his net in his own zone. And just a real steady, good hockey player for sure on the back end. He's going to get paid like it coming up.
Ken, just sticking with Capitals defensemen, how nice was it to see Brooks Orpik pop in a goal in game two? Because he's obviously known for being more of a defensive, physical defenseman.
Well, I will tell you, obviously, music to my ears, a guy that didn't score much as well. We didn't get paid to score. We got paid to keep it out of our net. And anytime you do score, make no mistake, we get as excited as anybody, if not more excited. I scored a Stanley Cup Finals goal, very similar to Brooks Orpik, where I hadn't scored all season long. And, you know, we're up there, longest goal droughts in the regular season, yet getting a Stanley Cup Finals goal in the league. And what it does is pump your bench up. I mean, look, you're always pumped when you score a goal and you get the momentum and all that. But when it's an unlikely source, you get pretty fired up on the bench. I remember it very well, vividly, in 2000 in Game 1 when we played the Dallas Stars, and I scored a goal to make it 2-1. We went on to win 7-3. But just the emotion from the bench, they're so happy for you. Because, you know, guys like Orpik, a veteran guy, does all the dirty work, blocks shots, plays physical, does what he's supposed to do. But when you score, it's awfully exciting, and I think the team gets more excited than anything.
Well, Ken, we're going to go from an unlikely scoring source to a likely scoring source, because Alexander Ovechkin seems to have the Washington Capitals on his back. What have you thought about from the Grade 8 so far this playoffs?
Well, it's taken over a decade for him to become a complete player, one of the best pure goal scorers we've seen, as we all know, in this game, in the history of the game. But he got some unfair criticism for me in the playoffs at times, because he always performed, the team underperformed, but that goes with the territory. Being a superstar, he's all of a sudden learned how to get his other teammates involved, be that leader, you know, take what's given to him, and he's been a beast, and contribute when you're not putting the puck in the net, which you probably couldn't say that in the past. And that means by leading the charge with a big hit because of his physicality, or making a play. He went down, I think, the other night in game two, blocked a shot. I mean, he's just doing all the little things that superstars need to do to get their teams to the next level. And it's kind of all clicked for him after 13 years in the National Hockey League, that what it takes, and it's more than goals from your star, to be successful and win a Stanley Cup. Just been so impressed with him. And even his interviews, you can tell, guys, he's really channeled in, focused, emotionally balanced at times, and understands the long haul here is what it's all about.
Ken Danico is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Stanley Cup Final. We're talking about the New Jersey Devils. Ken is, of course, an analyst with MSG Plus on Devils games. You also see him on NHL Network. Ken, you know, Christian Juice is playing some significant minutes on the back end for the Washington Capitals these playoffs. He's had a very good rookie season, sort of 63 games played for the Caps in the regular season, and then in addition to all of his playoff performance. What's it like being a rookie defenseman who knows he's being counted on night in, night out, and is getting regular minutes in the Stanley Cup Final and in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, invaluable experience, obviously, for him, although the Capitals certainly know you need young guys to be able to handle the pressure. And again, he's a small guy, smooth-skating defenseman, puck mover, excuse me, with the way the game has gone. He's done a real good job. They've used him, you know, protected him a little bit, try to make sure that, you know, not too many defensive zone faceoffs is all possible. It's a lot easier at home. And that will come with time and experience where he can become a guy they rely on heavily. But he's been steady, and that's what you want from your bottom pairing, along with Brooks Orpik there, who's the veteran who can really kind of settle him down. But he's just a slick, smart hockey player that moves the puck well. And I would expect Christian Juice to be a real good NHL defenseman moving forward, but he's done a good job in whenever the stakes are raised in a pressure-packed situation.
Well, Ken, back in 2003, I believe the Devils' fourth line was Pascal Rayom, Grant Marshall, and then you also had Mike Rupp there. Do you see similarities between that fourth line and the quote-unquote Vegas grind line of Pierre-Edward Belmar, Ryan Reeves, and Thomas Nosek?
Yeah, I really think you do from the standpoint, look, they want to bring the energy, that physical aspect to the game and, you know, force defensemen to turn pucks over and things like that. But if you're going to go four rounds and win a cup, you need them to chip in offensively. And how big did Mike Rupp come on in the scene in Game 7 where he, you know, all he did is score the game winner? And I always talk about unlikely sources. Your stars have to be stars. But being part of three Stanley Cup championships, being very fortunate, I understood whether it was 95 in our crash line in McKay, Peluso, and Holik, who scored huge goals consistently, or the Vegas Golden Knights and Ryan Reeves and Belmar, and certainly for the Capitals, you know, the Smith Pellys of the world, who's been up and down the lineup with Ivada, and Jay Beagle, who's played extremely well. These guys have to be able to not only bring energy, but chip in a timely goal. And again, the last two teams left probably have the most depth in the National Hockey League, and have that fourth line for both clubs have played extremely well, especially the Vegas Golden Knights, where, boy, as Ryan Reeves, the Winnipeg native, as you guys know, has come onto the scene, and he usually just brings that toughness, but he's been very effective throughout these playoffs and has really been able to adjust his game, especially the way it's gone, where you've got to be smart. He's played a pretty smart game throughout the playoffs since he's been in, but also bringing that physicality and then that huge goal he scores in game one.
By the way, Ken, Grant Marshall had 6 goals that year, so people think of Grant Marshall as being, you know, that tough guy, but he chipped in 6 goals that year.
Well, Randy McKay in 95, I don't know if you guys, we go way back, had 8 goals in that playoff year, because guys like Marshall, Randy McKay, these guys, and again, why you get to the finals, your fourth line has some skill. They both had real good hands. Grant Marshall had great hands, and he brought the physicality and would scrap when it was prevalent back then once in a while. But I'll tell you, around the net, he had a real nice set of hands and scored some big goals. I remember a huge double or triple overtime winner against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Made a great play in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2003, the Jeff Friesen late. They get us to the Stanley Cup Final against arguably the best team in the league, I thought, the Ottawa Senators that year. So these guys have to come up big when you need them once in a while, and certainly those guys have for both teams left in the Stanley Cup Finals, and Marshall and McKay from my era. We don't get where we do if these guys don't chip in offensively.
Ken Danico, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ken, we'll let you go with this last question. It's now down to a best of five between the Golden Knights and the Capitals. Game 3 obviously goes tonight. What do you think is going to be the determining factor between these two teams that seem so tightly matched after 2 games of this Stanley Cup Final?
Oh, boy. I mean, we always talk about goaltending, right, guys? It just may come down to the goaltending again, too. Terrific one, certainly Marc-Andre Fleury. Capitals and Braden Holtby. Capitals have been able to get to him a little bit here, so they have to be confident that they're able to beat him. He looked unbeatable at times through the first 3 rounds. And again, it's going to be that team that stays disciplined. Both teams took a couple of bad offensive penalties. It's all the little things. Every little thing matters. Don't turn the puck over. Game 1, Smith-Kelly turns it over. Great play by Shea Theodore right inside the blue line. Those are all the little things that really what it comes down to, and which team makes the least mistakes usually comes out on top, along with great goaltending. And if your big guns, and obviously Marchessault, who's had a lot of shots, hasn't scored in this series, doesn't get going, I would favor, as far as getting himself on the score sheet, he's played pretty well, I'd favor the Capitals if Ovechkin and them keep going. And a big question mark is Kuznetsov. Can he be back in the lineup? But boy, have they overcome some big injuries throughout these playoffs. So, like I said, that's where the mental toughness of the Capitals has changed dramatically in the last few playoff years to this year.
Ken Danico is an NHL analyst. You know him from New Jersey Devils broadcasts and the NHL Network. Ken, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a great day. Enjoy the game tonight. Should be a doozy.
Likewise, Ken. Thanks very much. When we come back, we continue talking about the Winnipeg Jets. We'll discuss Connor Hellebuck and what he might be looking for is a restricted free agent this offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Being checked by Roslovic, came to the front of the net. Chance now. Oh, what a save! Rebound, scramble in front. Hellebuck is down. Connor Hellebuck with an unbelievable save to keep this game tied 2-2.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Producer Rory McGoran doing a great job on the other side of the board. This segment, where we'll be talking about Connor Hellebuck, is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Connor Hellebuck was the catalyst, to a lot of people's minds, of the Winnipeg Jets' success this season. If it wasn't for his performance and him elevating his game this year to be a top-flight Vezina Trophy winning or Vezina Trophy candidate goaltender, who knows what the Winnipeg Jets' season would have been. He's going to strike it rich with a very nice payday, given that he's coming off of a contract. He is a restricted free agent with arbitration eligibility, but I think both sides would be able to nail down a contract between the Jets and Hellebuck's representatives. Do you have any qualms, Mr. Ginsburg, Mr. Minyuk, of signing him to a 6 or 7 year deal, despite the fact he's only had 1 year of exceptional NHL success?
No. And I think there's always the chance, guys, that Connor Hellebuck signs a shorter-term deal, but if you're the Jets, why would you not sign him to a long-term contract? You just mentioned he's coming off his best season, nominated for a Vezina Trophy. He could win the Vezina Trophy. And you know that he can now play 65 to 70 games for you. Doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to play 65 or 70 games, but he's definitely going to play, if he's healthy, 60-plus games next year, right? You know what you have. He has proven to you during the regular season and the playoffs, by the way. Sure, Marc-Andre Fleury outplayed him in the Western Conference Final. But how could you possibly outplay Marc-Andre Fleury the way he's played this year? So Hellebuck was excellent not only in the regular season but in the playoffs. You know what you have if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff. So I think you sign him to a 6, 7, maybe even 8 year contract. And as far as how much money Hellebuck's going to get, probably around $7 million a year.
You think it's going to be that high?
I think so.
Even though that he still has years to buy out, you know, before he's an unrestricted free agent?
And maybe you pay him a little bit less in the earlier years, or maybe you pay him a little bit more in the earlier years, Drew. But, I mean, you have the number one goaltender that you've been seeking for 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. Andrei Pavlik never materialized into the goaltender that they thought he was going to be. He never lived up to that contract. Right? Mm-hmm. So I think Connor Hellebuck's going to get paid. He should get paid. He's an excellent goaltender. I don't know if it's $7 million a year. It could be $6 million a year, but it's going to be somewhere in that range. And quite frankly, he deserves it. You have your franchise goaltender. He's the best goaltender the Jets 1.0 or 2.0 franchise has ever had. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. The Jets, sure, Bob Esenza was a Vezina Trophy finalist as well. But Connor Hellebuck, no, sorry, not Vezina Trophy finalist, Rookie of the Year, wasn't he?
I think Calder, yeah. I don't think he was ever a
Vezina.
No,
not Vezina. 1990, was that?
Sounds familiar.
I think Esenza was a Calder Trophy finalist. The point is, he's their franchise goaltender. They didn't have that in Andre Pavlik.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have your number one goaltender. So I think you have to pay him. So whatever it is, obviously that's why Chevy and Larry Simmons, they get paid the big bucks to give out the big bucks. He's going to be paid. So $5.5 million a year, $6.5 million a year, whatever it is, he deserves it.
Dave?
Ezra's dropping millions here.
He's just giving away the money like it's not even his own.
Yeah, this is just like dollar bills, y'all.
Yeah.
I'm throwing it out because I don't have it.
I know. $1. You don't even have the dollar bill.
He's actually just throwing loonies right now. But no, I think that there's definitely an appeal to a guy that is a homegrown goaltender, one that you've seen, you've drafted,
Isn't he from Michigan?
Well, I didn't mean homegrown literally as, but sure.
Organizationally homegrown.
Yes, he is from Michigan.
Ezra's very literal.
So I think that if you have this guy that you've developed to this degree, and let's be realistic, the Jets' defense improved this year over what they did last year, which obviously helped Connor Hellebuck. But Connor Hellebuck made the improvements over the summer last year that he needed to in his game that really impacted what he needed to get done to take his game from where it was to what we saw this past season. And you know, I mean, look, there's probably a good chance that he played too much during the 2017-18 season, regular season, not obviously during the playoffs, but during the regular season. And the fact is, I'm with Ez. Like, I think this is the guy that is going to get paid. I think he's the guy who's going to get some term because from a Jets perspective, you know, a number one goaltender is not something you can just be willy-nilly about and say, okay, well, you know, we can find them. You can't. You just can't find them. They don't grow on trees. And even when you draft them, they take a while to develop. So the reality is, if you're going to try and get one from another organization, it's going to cost you a lot of money. If you're going to try and draft one, it's going to take a lot of time. So what do the Jets have right now with a team that they know over the next 3 to 5 years,
mm-hmm.
maybe even next year, but I'm saying like from the perspective of you're looking...
Their window is now.
Their window is, but it's a longer window. We're not talking about a short window, which is hence the reason why you're thinking Connor Hellebuck for a long-term perspective, not a short-term perspective. So to me, the idea that you have this guy who you have a lot of confidence in, the team has a lot of confidence in, I can't see you not giving him the contract that is a longer-term one.
I was going to say, Drew, Pekka Rinne makes $7 million a year. But Pekka Rinne is 35 years old.
Right.
So I'm not saying that Pekka Rinne is a comparable. But Hellebuck just outplayed Rinne in the second round of the playoffs.
Sure.
So Why not give him $6 million a year or $6.5 million a year? $500,000, I don't think the Jets are going to have a problem with that because he is your franchise goaltender who you're going to build your team around in addition to Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers. He's a cornerstone piece.
The name that jumped out to me is a guy who's playing right now in the Stanley Cup Finals, and that's Braden Holtby. Because Braden Holtby had his breakout season in 2014-15. And after that season ended, so 2014-15, Braden Holtby plays 73 games for the Washington Capitals, an incredible number. A 2.22 save percentage and a 2.22 goals against average and a 923 save percentage. You look at Connor Hellebuck this year, his breakout year, 67 games played, goals against average of 2.36 and a save percentage of 924. So the numbers are similar. But then in that postseason, if you remember, Braden Holtby was absolutely incredible. A 171 goals against average and a 944 save percentage. Very similar situation to Connor Hellebuck. Obviously, yep. Hellebuck's numbers not quite that good in this postseason, but Braden Holtby's numbers were exceptional. But the regular season numbers are similar. It's his breakout year, just like it was Hellebuck's breakout year. Holtby had played one more year in professional hockey when he signed his contract. And Holtby signed a five-year $30.5 million deal that he's currently playing under, $6.1 million a year. And the Capitals have to be happy with what the value they've got out of that contract from Braden Holtby.
So based on that, you got to think Hellebuck's going to be somewhere between $6 million and $6.5 million.
Right.
Right?
I would
probably
say
closer to $6.5 million.
I'll say closer to $6.5 million only because Holtby signed that contract about 3 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, natural inflation is that the contract's going to cost you a little more than it did 3 seasons ago.
But Drew, you mentioned Holtby's numbers. Hellebuck's goals against average was the same in the playoffs as it was during the regular season.
He was consistent.
2.36, but we know that save percentage is the better stat. And he had a 922 save percentage and a 924 save percentage. 924 during the regular season, 922 during the playoffs.
He was consistent.
And that save percentage went down in the Western Conference Final. It was closer to 930. Mm-hmm. Through the first two rounds, right? So Hellebuck's numbers were excellent during the playoffs.
He was the same goaltender, more or less, in the regular season and the playoff, or he was the same goaltender in the playoffs as he was in the regular season. So, I mean, I look at that Holtby contract and say, boy, there's a lot of reasons why the Jets can just sort of emulate this contract as it pertains to Connor Hellebuck and as it pertains to getting him under a long-term deal.
Holtby is a great comparable also, Drew, because Holtby started off a little slow like Hellebuck. Right,
he didn't. Takes time to develop.
He didn't step into the league like Steve Mason, for example. Remember Steve Mason's rookie year?
Sure, with the Columbus Blue Jackets,
right? 10 shutouts and all that.
Calder Trophy winning.
So
absolutely.
I think there are a lot of parallels between Hellebuck and Holtby. Holtby's what, 2 years older than Hellebuck, I believe, or 3 years older?
Holtby is 28. He's turning 29 in September.
Yeah, so he's 3 years older than Hellebuck.
Yeah, which makes sense. He started his career earlier. I mean, I just thought that the Holtby contract jumped out to me as one the Jets would very much be looking to emulate. Probably
it's a good thing you're doing research because all I'm doing is changing diapers.
Yeah, well, you have a built-in excuse as for why your researching might be a little bit lackadaisical over the last week. But you only get to use that excuse for 1 week. We expect you back to your A game by next week. And actually, we expect Ariel to be in studio providing some analysis.
Ariel.
Yeah, Ariel, pardon me.
Ariel. I'm like, who is that? Like, this isn't like...
Sorry, I don't know where I mean, I haven't... So it's the emphasis is on the R? Like Ariella, not Ariella?
Yes. Ariella is named after Naomi's dad.
Ah, beautiful.
His Hebrew name was Aryeh.
Ah, exactly. Which
so Ariella is named after Naomi's dad, and also my grandmother, my mom's mom, her first name was Hazel, Ariella Hazel.
Hazel
so both,
being her
both named
name?
After family members.
Exactly, and Aryeh, of course, in Hebrew, being lion.
Yes.
So, you know, she's
Ariella is the lion of God.
And the lion of your family, no doubt whatsoever. Yes. When we come back, we're going to talk about the NHL draft. Somehow that's only a few weeks away. Guy Flaming of the Pipeline Show is going to talk to us.
Let's talk prospects, baby.
We'll talk prospects with coming up next. Western Hockey League draft eligible prospects. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.